I would see him again. I'd be like, oh, this dude, he's pretty funny. And then like on the third show, he was like, he was drinking like this much whiskey before he went up. And I was like, what's going on? He was, that's how I do it, man. And I was like, oh, this dude's out of his mind. Yeah. I didn't put it together at first.
Oh, I thought people were going to be stars until I like got a ride in their car. Uh-huh. And you're like, no, man, you're not going to make it anywhere. Like, this is a disaster. 100%. Cheers.
My favorite spring cleaning takeaway is the post-clean clarity you get. Wow, how have I been living like this? It's kind of like when you find out that you've been paying a fortune for wireless. When Mint Mobile has phone plans for $15 a month, when you purchase a three-month plan, more like, wow, how have I been affording this? It's time to switch to Mint Mobile and get unlimited talk, text, and data for $15 a month. We use Mint Mobile at the office, and we have been saving so much money since switching over, and setting up on Mint Mobile's website was super easy. To get this new customer offer and your new three-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/bears. That's mintmobile.com/bears. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/bears. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 per month. New customers on first 3 months plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details. Anthony Jeselnik, cancel culture. What are your thoughts? What can we do? How can we move forward?
I think just everyone needs to know that comedians can say whatever they want, whenever they want, even if it's not funny, and you can never get mad or be sensitive because we're not sensitive, and we're sensitive about that.
Agreed. Topic over. We are sensitive little babies, though, I think.
Of course.
At the end of the day, when people are like, you know, especially talk to somebody who doesn't work in comedy or something, they start asking you questions. Ultimately, I'll be like, yeah, we're pretty sensitive, you know?
We are, but you learn how to handle
yes.
certain things. You know, like if you tell a joke and the joke bombs, like it hurts a little bit. You mm-hmm. know, that's part of the game.
Yeah.
But when you're complaining about it all the time, it's like, why are you doing this?
Yeah,
you
know? No.
It's like a football player, like they get beat up during the season. Sometimes they'll talk about it. But if after every game you were like, man, that guy hurt me so much when he hit me in the arm. Like, oh, like it's just like, why do you sound like this?
Yeah, I totally agree. And I gotta say, like, jokes bombing sucks, but I don't feel like I don't really go like, oh man, you know, I usually hate myself for the joke bombing.
Oh, you know? Of course. Like, you blame yourself.
Yeah, I'm like, oh fuck, why can't I figure this out?
Dude, I've been so excited about a new joke. Like, this is gonna be, and then it's like crickets where you're like, oh, I was so wrong. It's embarrassing.
I think every time I've ever been like, this is the shit that I'm about, like I'll be like so excited, that never goes well. It's only the one where I'm like, I don't know, I just kind of thought of this, or it's just like literally coming out without a plan, and like everybody, and you're like, that's the one? Like,
oh, I know when it's like halfway out of my mouth.
Yeah,
what's gonna happen?
Yeah,
like, on paper it looks great, but reading it out, you're just like, oh no, this was a huge mistake. But you have to make those mistakes.
Yeah,
if every new joke you try kills, you're not working hard enough.
No, no. I mean, I also feel like I have a thing where if I get real excited about a really specific word choice, like I'm going to say, like, you know, this is the structure of the sentence. And I get married to, like, I romanticize the sentence. I'm like, oh, it's just like, it's like a sophisticated way of saying this. That always eats shit for mm-hmm. me. Like, you know, I'm like, I feel like I've written like great literature to say to them. And then it just nothing.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you completely screwed it up from the get go.
Yeah.
And it's funny to me that 20 years in, I could still be so, so wrong.
So wrong.
Like, your instincts are just completely, completely wrong.
I have things tonight that are completely, completely new, and I have anxiety, you know, which I like, because I know it's familiar. I go, oh, this mm-hmm. means that I'm trying something that this could go poorly.
Yeah.
And that's the good feeling. You go, this could go poorly. It might go great. But like, I'm already nervous about it.
Oh, I got a dog during the pandemic, like to get me through it. Mm-hmm. And the whole time I'm like, man, this dog is going to write me a new hour. Like, everything about this dog is great. And like, I can't wait. People are going to want to hear about this dog. And no one gives a flying fuck about my dog.
Yeah, like, I got a dog. Like, people got dogs, man. No one gives a fuck.
Yeah, I'm like, this one's from Korea. And they're like, mm-hmm. Like, we don't even believe you. Like, we don't think, not only do we not think this is funny, we don't believe you.
Yeah, right now, I don't believe you. Yeah. I don't believe that the dog's from Korea.
No.
I think you made that shit up.
Yeah.
People, you have a way of saying things where it actually does feel like you could be making it up all the time.
No, I get, are you serious?
Yeah.
A lot.
Yeah.
A lot.
It's your, it's the look and the delivery of it where you could be like, of course I'm fucking, I'm like, all right, I didn't know you didn't get a dog from Korea.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I feel like it's made up.
I've had to go the other way too with it. Like, are you serious? I'm like, no. And they're like, oh, why are you doing this to me? Why are you putting me through this?
Yeah. I love walking people into like misinformation purposely though. It's fun. Like in conversations. You know?
I enjoy it, but I kind of, I call it like the Nate Bargatze approach where you're not malicious. You just, it's a yes or no thing.
Yeah.
You know, if someone's like, hey, is it true that you don't have to wear face masks anymore? Like, yes.
Yeah.
And they're just like, I wouldn't tell someone, hey man, I heard news,
right,
COVID's over. You can just go do whatever you want. But if someone asks them a dumb question, just give a dumb answer and then watch them fall apart. Like,
okay. Yeah. And Nate, you referenced Nate because he's so good at the deadpan answer.
I think he's just talked about like his favorite form of prank is just that, like he told me a story once about like being on the road with Kurt Metzger. Mm-hmm. And Kurt Metzger pulled out like a thing like out of the hotel shower, like a thing of conditioner. Maybe I'm telling the story wrong, but it was like the conditioner. He's like, is this body lotion? And his prank was just to go, yes. And so he just smears conditioner all over his chest and they have to go do two shows where the whole time Metzger's like, what the fuck? And Nate's just dying laughing.
He's like, it's conditioner, man.
Yeah. He didn't do anything mean. He just didn't help you out.
that is a great one.
Yeah.
Have you heard Bert's theory that Nate's a lot like Hitler?
No, but I would believe it because of the hating Jews thing.
Well, that's just the first layer.
Okay.
Bert's theory is that he goes, have I told you how Hitler and Nate Bargatze are a lot alike? And I was like, I'm listening. And he said, you know, Hitler took over Germany, but he was Austrian. I was like, okay. And Nate Bargatze didn't go to Vanderbilt, but he's a huge fan.
Way too big a fan.
Yeah. And that's the similarity.
That's all he had.
That's what he had. Yeah.
That, I guarantee Bert like just found out about the Austria thing and was like, just went down a rabbit hole. And that was as far as he could get.
He likes to say, I'm obsessed with history now. And you're like, you saw 10 minutes on the fucking History Channel. And he's like, yeah. And he thinks he's like a history buff now because he literally watched a clip. He's like, did you know Hitler was from Austria? Like, yeah, a lot of people know that, man.
Yeah. Weird choice for a best friend, man. Weird choice.
I know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Doing great. He's doing great.
When you invited me to this, I was like, people are going to be either psyched or furious.
They're psyched.
Yeah. I've been a guest on a lot of podcasts where people are mad.
Why?
Because I think they don't know who I am or get why I'm funny or why I do what I do. Like, I get a lot of like, this guy's so fucking arrogant. It's like, yep. Like I did Bobby Lee's podcast. And people are like, this is bullshit. He's not giving Bobby like the courtesy laughs he needs to get going. And I'm like, I'm not going to give anyone courtesy laughs. There's no way.
I've known you long enough to know that that's a reality.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
We were doing shows together in 2000 fucking 2 or 3.
Yeah, we started together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We should do like bringer shows, you know.
And Comedy
like
the, Union.
Comedy Union with Enns. That was his name. Enns was the owner.
Yes.
You remember that?
Yeah.
And yeah, like these weird, like where I would always know like, oh, okay, this is going to be good when you were on the show. Cause I would see people, I'd be like, this guy's homeless. This guy sucks. You know, and then I'd see, oh, Anthony's on the show.
It was so hard to find the people. Cause in the beginning you think everyone's going to make it.
Yeah.
Like we're all on our way up. We have our different paths, but then you start to realize there's like a couple of people, a couple of gems. And
you're
one of those guys for me that I was like, this guy is going to go as far as he wants to.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm still surprised that you've gotten to this level.
Yeah,
for sure. But,
for sure. Me
but
too.
I knew
me too.
I knew you were like not a crazy person.
Yeah. That was the thing is that you would there. I remember like, sometimes you'd see somebody and you're like, that guy's pretty funny. And then, I don't know, maybe like a couple months later you see him on and it hits you like, oh, this guy's insane. Mm-hmm. Like, I didn't know that at first.
Yeah.
You know, there's one guy, I don't remember his name, that he had like a really funny, like aggressive rant style. And then I would see him again. I'd be like, oh, this dude, he's pretty funny. And then like on the third show, he was drinking like this much whiskey before he went up. And I was like, what's going on? He was like, that's how I do it, man. And I was like, oh, this dude's out of his mind. Yeah. And I didn't put it together at first.
Oh, I thought people were going to be stars until I like got a ride in their car. Uh-huh. And you're like, no, man, you're not going to make it anywhere. Like, this is a disaster.
you ever see like somebody who so neglects just the inside of their car, like to where there's actual trash. And then you're like, oh, this is how you drive around. I don't know what's going on in there, mm-hmm. but it's got to be
exactly
a complete train wreck.
If you don't have the wherewithal to take the garbage out of the front and put it all in the back, dude. Then and you invite me to sit shotgun, then like something's off upstairs.
I got
it's not that hard.
Into one time where it was like, I looked down and it was just piles of, it was the most filthy I've ever seen in my life. I mean, it looked like a hoarder. And then you look in the back, and a car seat. And I was like, dude. And he's like, I got to get it. And they do something like casual, like, yeah, I got to get this cleaned up. Like you would if you had like, you know, a little bit of like leaves on the ground. You're like, you need to burn this car, man. You need to set this car on fire.
Hearing that just makes me want to get a baby seat for the back of my car and just have it in there and have like a baby doll and just like lock it up out in the sun and then just wait.
Like, do one of those pranks where they put the baby seat on the roof of the car.
That jackass, that's the funniest thing jackass ever did.
Yeah.
Was drive off out of the mall with the baby seat on top. Baby seat. So funny.
I mean, seeing the real genuine panic on people. Or they also had the one that I loved where the guy has somebody in the trunk, but like on purpose.
Yeah.
And the trunk pops and the person's like, and they're all tied up. And you see people. And it's also like interesting to see people who are like, oh.
Yeah.
Anyway, like,
I mean, that's how I would be in LA. Yeah. That's how you would be. You'd be like, they must be filming a prank show or something. I remember as a kid watching HBO and they would have random prank shows from like around the world. Mm-hmm. And there was one where, like, even thinking about it today, it makes me laugh so hard that they had the balls to do this, where somebody would walk up holding a briefcase mm-hmm. in the middle of a crowded street, drop it, and then take off running. Uh-huh. And everyone thinks it's a bomb uh-huh. and they all scatter
Where
and
was
run
this?
Away. It was on some prank show in, I don't know what country it was in.
Because Japan does the wildest shit.
It may have been Japanese. Yeah. It may have been just one of those European countries where this was happening a lot.
Eastern but European like, countries.
But to make people think they're about to die in a bomb is not a good
Dude,
prank.
There's a Japanese prank show that I saw. I used to watch these and cry because all their shows are absolutely insane. Like what flies in Japan is so crazy. And they had this prank show where they walked like a couple into, I think it was like, look at this apartment, right? So like a real estate thing. And then they had like special effects guns shooting into the apartment and like glass shattering and people screaming and they're like, ah! Like total panic. And they're covering them like, stay on the ground, like screaming, crying. And then they're like, it was just a joke. The people were fully fucking panicked.
You must not be allowed to sue anyone in Japan.
I think it can't be, man.
There was one I saw where the guy's just walking down the hallway and they must have like known there were like pranks going on. So they're just like, they're kind of okay. But like the floor falls out and he falls into water, but it's boiling hot water. So the guy's desperately trying to get out, like no laugh. Everyone's trying to laugh and he's just like survival getting out of it and just mad at everyone. Doesn't want to look at anybody. And I'm like, who thought of this? Yeah. Why not cold water?
Right.
Cold water would have done the same job and then everyone's
Shocked
laughing.
Shocked them, yeah.
Yeah.
The hot water, he's got boils and shit now.
I knew a girl when I first started doing stand-up who had been on a prank show that never aired. It was like a pilot. And one of the pranks is they would be in like a Motel 6, like a cheesy motel. And it looked like they were doing surgery on her. She's like in makeup where she's like half naked on the bed and they're pulling out organs like black market shit. And they would order pizzas. And then try to get the delivery guy in and close the door and have them freak out. And one guy sees this and dives out the window, out onto like the balcony, completely just destroys himself. He's all cut up, but he was an illegal immigrant and they could not get him to go to the hospital. They're like, we'll pay for all of this. We'll take care of you. And he was like, no, no, no. Fought for an hour. They like put bandages on him and he left. And they ended the show. They're like, we can't do any more pranks. Like, this is terrible. Yeah.
And I mean, those people need to stay in their country, man. It's like, if you're going to...
If you don't have a good sense of humor, don't come here.
Don't come here.
You know what I mean?
We're just fucking around, man.
Yeah. Just.
God.
We're just pranking around.
Yeah.
You know?
Why are you being such a dick about it, man?
We pay better for our pranks.
We totally do. But I'm telling you, man, in Japan, it would be interesting to figure out like how they get away. Like even that one that I saw that I was telling you about, that is so traumatizing. You know what I mean? To have like the glass shattering, and they had like, it looked like there's bullets hole, you know, like you see in a movie, and these people were like absolutely screaming for their lives. And then they're like, ha ha.
Yeah, it's PTSD. You're not getting over that anytime soon.
You're never going to go look at an apartment again.
But something about, like, just like America is so litigious.
Yes.
I remember going to Germany when I was 18 with a bunch of friends and going to a water slide park.
Mm-hmm.
And in America, there's a lifeguard every 5 feet.
Yeah.
You know, there's like two up at the top. There's some at the bottom. Like, you do anything, you're getting a whistle. There was one lifeguard for the entire water park in the middle. So like we were just eight guys diving down a slide together. When you hit the bottom, you just like, it's a pile up and you're all just like laying there groaning.
Yeah.
And they'd be like, guys, please don't do that.
Like, and this
they
is
just
where?
Don't, this is in Germany.
Yeah.
They don't sue the way people sue here, and you can pull off anything.
I wonder why that evolved, why it became such a litigious, you know, like why? I mean, because famously, every time I think of like us being a crazy country with that, I always think of that McDonald's story, you know, it was so famous, the person burned themselves, and then they're like, I'm suing McDonald's.
But that was a severe burn.
But wasn't it like a severe burn of super hot coffee?
No, it was like they made their coffee way hotter than any coffee ever is. And they ended up, like, the amount seems insane, but it was actually just the amount of money a McDonald's made in coffee for one day.
Really?
Like, it wasn't that much money. Like, McDonald's deserved to do more than what they ate.
They burned the fuck out of this person.
Oh, I mean, beyond third degree, like, major surgeries. Yeah. And they had been getting complaints for years. The coffee was too hot. It was just how they decided to make it. But yeah, it was like you couldn't drink this coffee for an hour after you got it. Like,
God,
it
would, damn.
That lawsuit's more legit than you think. But like in Russia, the way they have dash cam videos, it's because people were jumping in front of cars to try to get money, to try to get insurance money. So it's like, I'll put this dash cam on and now no one can sue me for this.
Russia,
so it comes around.
They don't fuck around though. And also, like, there's no such thing as suing, like, a police officer in Moscow. That's not happening, dude.
No.
You could, like, give him that lawsuit. He'll staple you that lawsuit to your neck if you bring it to a police officer.
Oh, yeah. If you were like, I want to sue, like, Lieutenant Ivan, they'd be like, we don't have that guy there.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
He's not here.
Yeah.
You're dead.
And keep coming around with that bullshit and see what happens to you, man.
Mm-hmm.
I remember that Clayton Peters, Russell Peters' brother, told me he was going to a TV pitch here a few years ago.
Are you crying?
Yeah, it was because I was laughing. Yeah.
Is Clayton still alive?
He is, okay. Yes. But he slipped and he hurt his knee on a studio lot. And, you know, they tended to him and they were like, fuck. And they were like, you know, we're going to... And they're like, I guess, you know, I don't know... We should just get right into like settlement talks and stuff. And he was like, what? And they go, well, you know, you slipped here on the lot. And he was like, I'm Canadian. And they're like, so he's like, I'll just get a knee brace.
Yeah.
Like my knee hurts, but I'm not suing you.
Yeah. Give me an ice pack and we'll be okay.
Yeah. And that was it. And they were like, he said, they were just like, are you seriously not going to sue us? And he was like, no.
I was on the road once and I was staying at this new hotel that was like next to the club or next to the theater or whatever. And I get in there and they're excited that I'm there. They're like, oh, you got to see all this. We want to give you a tour of everything. And I'm like, yeah, all right. And they're like, we've got a bar on the roof. It's like this amazing new bar. Everything's on us. Like, come here after the show. We're going to take care of you. And it'd been raining outside and they had like a smoking lounge. And then you come out of the smoking lounge, take a step down and get back into the bar. And after I'd like toward the end of the night, it's my last drink. I go out and have a cigarette. And I haven't smoked in fucking 5 years. This was forever ago. And I take a step down and it was so new. They hadn't thought to put down like a mat, you know, when it was wet. And I step into like a puddle and my foot goes flying and I just eat it completely like flat on my back on the ground. Staff comes up, people start mopping. Someone puts a mat down, but no one spoke to me the rest of the night. They were so scared that if they were like, how are you? I was going to be like, I want to talk to a lawyer. They just like ignored me until I left.
Yeah.
Which I was like, I'm not going to sue. I'm going to have some bruises tomorrow, but I blame myself more than anyone else.
Of course.
But yeah, they will avoid you.
Dude, I slid down the stairs on St. Patty's. They had a bar in New York City, like from that one of those, like the bathrooms downstairs, the whole flight.
Like on your ass?
On my ass the whole way. And when I got to the bottom, I was like laid there for a second. And then I stood up and I leaned on the wall. And then like this guy walked by me. He's like, damn, that shit looked like that hurt. And I was like, I go, it did. I mean, the bruise was like deep black, you know, like huge. But I mean, of course, it never occurred to me. I was like, I slipped on my stupid ass, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going to, hey guys, the floor's wet.
It would have to be something malicious for me to sue. Like something really beyond the pale, but I couldn't imagine.
But your own slipping and falling, it's, I mean,
never.
People, never. But people think like that, you know?
Yeah. Oh yeah, they like, I mean, that's winning the lottery to them. Remember that there was like a picture that was on, went online where there was a Walmart where the W was like kind of like, was kind of like swinging, like it was like about to fall at some point. And there was some guy who would just stand underneath it all day and hope that it would fall and hit him on the head and he would get all this money from Walmart.
This is so crazy that people, like, people asked me, they're like, oh, you know, you were able to monetize your injury. And I was like, yeah, because we did a live show after. And they're like, so that's pretty great, huh? I'm like, yeah, no, you don't want that to happen.
Yeah,
man.
You don't want the injury. Yeah, once it like, happens, it's like, well, what am I going to talk about on my next podcast?
Right.
This. But you weren't like, oh, good.
And and people are like, oh, I would do that for a check. And you're like, no, you wouldn't, man.
No,
it fucking sucks.
Yeah, like, to know it was coming. About? Like, yeah,
no way, man.
You're just gonna talk about what happened to you that week, and that was what happened to you. But you're not. No part of you was like, thank God,
dude.
I never would have come up with something.
So cool, like, how my tendon snapped, and then my arm did too. Yeah. Like, no, it sucks.
And I have one of the I have one of the shirts.
You do?
Yeah. I have the athletic one that I did not know what that meant when I bought it. I thought just a t-shirt.
Oh, it's
that
like I could the wear workout around. One.
Yeah. So it's like shiny. I don't know if I'll ever.
It's the Air Segura one.
Yes.
I'll send you some new ones.
But it made me laugh. I was like, I've got to have this.
I'm going to send you a couple more.
Okay.
You give me your address. We'll give you a little injury bundle.
Yeah, I'll do that. I'll give you my address.
You won't do that?
I'll give you my address.
Okay. Yeah, see, the way you said that, I was like, he's definitely not giving me his address.
No.
So I always think, like, because even from the early days, like when we would do those early shows, and you always had great, like just great jokes. It is like the early who we know now, like your comedy now, but like obviously like the early days of like, surprise jokes, dark stuff, you know. And a lot of times, you know, we were doing like small shows, like bar shows, sometimes club shows. But I mean, you know, you mostly had, like, mostly you'd have really good sets. I would definitely see you have sets where there's a lot of like oohs and ahs, like the crowd, like, oh my, you know, groans and stuff. But I mean, now you do a show, like a big show, your fans are coming out to see you. But you have to have some epic, this did not go well shows, right?
No, 100%. Like, especially at like a festival
or
somewhere where like it's not necessarily for me.
Yeah.
A lot of these shows where I'm like one of many, you know, it can be brutal. It can be brutal. Like back in the Chris D'Elia days at the Comedy Store, if Joe Rogan wasn't there to like balance out the audience and it was all D'Elia fans, he would go out and destroy before, just absolutely destroy.
Yeah.
And then I would walk out and they took every goddamn word literally. Yeah. And we're furious.
Really?
Just like, oh yeah, they would get.
So at the store, you'd have these horrible bombs.
Mm-hmm. Even at the store. OR, main room. Really? I mean, it didn't matter. Belly room. I've eaten such shit in the belly room where I'm like, okay. But then I go to Largo, you know, once a month and it's my crowd.
Yeah.
And because I've put in that work where like I'm eating shit in front of these people, like it just destroys. So I'm like, oh, I have to do that. It's not like, oh, these guys don't get it. It's like, this is just part of the process. But some people, I'm always shocked that some people just take me literally. I'll tell a joke and someone's like, are you serious? Like, I'll hear that from the audience.
Yeah.
It's like, of course not.
Yeah.
But I kind of get it because some people just think comedians.
And if somebody is like, are you serious? I'm assuming you're like, totally.
Mm-hmm. 100% serious. Yeah. Yes. But it just happened to be people laughing. You know, like, I don't normally perform at comedy clubs, but normally this is my TED talk, but tonight I showed up here.
Yeah. I mean, there's nothing like following a murderer in one of those rooms, and, like, especially at the store, and you're like, I don't, like, it's either going to be a wave you can ride, or you're like, that was for that person, you know?
Well, I'm so the opposite. Like, nobody wants to follow Sebastian at the Comedy Store.
Right.
But it's like, I stand very still. And I'm like, and I use my silences that going after Sebastian is kind of like a fun challenge for me.
Yeah.
That I don't worry about it. There's nobody that I really wouldn't want to follow unless they try to be just like me.
Oh,
I have to
right.
be careful picking openers on the road because it's always like the one open micer kid who's like, his dream is to open for me. Like, I'm going to see him and be like, yes, that's what I do. Come open right. for me.
But you're like, you're the career. Same thing.
Yeah. It's like, I never want to see that.
Yeah.
I'd rather see Nate Bargatze. I'd rather watch you. You know, there's like five guys whose specials I watch or I watch in the room.
Yeah.
And usually I just don't want anything to do with it. I've been doing this 20 years.
I try to think in this way too about bringing someone open for me where I go, I want that person to be a different POV than mine. Like, mm-hmm. I don't want a 42-year-old white guy with a beard opening for me, who's married with kid. Like, it's the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I like to bring like women or it's like a single black guy or, you know what I mean? Like a Latina woman. So it's like, at least the POV that you're hearing is different than the one I'm about to do right after it.
Yeah.
You know,
I want someone completely different from me and old enough that I don't hate them by the end of the weekend. You know what I mean? You ever brought someone who's like cool, but just too young.
Yes.
We're like, this isn't going to work. Like, I can't talk to you.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't have a problem with you, but like in 20 years we can talk.
Yeah. Like their like life experience, their energy is totally, it's like foreign, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah. If you're 22, if you're in your 20s, even, unless you're like 29, I'll give you a shot. Mm-hmm. But the 20s, I want nothing to do with it.
Do you have a regular like circle of openers?
Every tour, I pick a new circle.
You mix it up on the tour.
Yeah, like basically, I'll have like an East Coast, a West Coast, and then someone when neither one of those can do it.
Yeah.
I bring somebody. But then on the next tour, either they've become a headliners at that point, or I just want new people anyway. And it's getting harder. Like the older that I get, I pay attention to less of like what's going on in the scene below me. Mm-hmm. So I really like have to, you know, take someone's advice on like who's the new person I should take out. And if I recognize the name, I'm like, okay, like we'll bring them out.
Yeah. It's hard to stay like totally in touch with that. You know, like when you have things going on, you're like, I don't know, man.
Yeah. I don't want to watch the show anymore. Like I'm in the green room until it's my time to go up. And a lot of it's like, I don't want to see what comics are doing because I don't want things getting in my head.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a lot of comics I won't watch until after I've done my special. Cause it's like, they've got a bit on abortion too. I don't want things to overlap.
Yeah.
But a lot of it's like, I just don't enjoy watching comedy the way I did in the beginning. We're like, they've got a new joke. Oh, Victor Fernando's got a new one. Like, I don't give a shit. Like,
I get anxiety. I've always been like this too. For the most part, watching sets even locally, like, you know, like watching the show, I just have a hard time standing in the room. Mm-hmm. You know, like I'll even like, let's say in the OR, like I'll stand that back, you know, like right by that where the stairs kind of go in, and I'll watch. I can kind of stomach more an act that is such a departure from something so foreign to me that I can, but like if it's somebody that like, I don't know, is in like my wheelhouse, I start pacing and I step out of the room.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, they're like, all right, they got like a minute left. I'm like, all right, now I can go back.
I should remember like being in New York and doing the Comedy Cellar a lot. Like you had, there was the comics table upstairs. Mm-hmm. And then to go to the bathroom, you had to go down the stairs and walk through the showroom.
Mm-hmm.
And Colin was talking, giving me a compliment saying, I heard one of your jokes walking through because he's like, I don't want to watch somebody's stupid act.
Right.
And the way he said it, it was like, yes. Like, yeah. I just don't want to watch your act.
Right.
And I used to go down and watch Dave Attell. Mm-hmm. Every time he performed. And then I started doing his mannerisms. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I've got to stop this right now.
Yeah.
Like part of it is you just don't want to pick up. There, remember?
I dressed like him for a year.
A lot of people did.
I can show you a picture of me of like in a black jacket, in a logoless hat. And I'm like holding the mic like this. And I'm like, and you're like, you like to tell? I'm like, a little bit. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, it was like, I thought that was like what you would do. You know what I mean? Like when I saw him, and I go like, oh, this is what I should do. I didn't even think I was doing something wrong.
Oh yeah, I mean, if you had seen my first like 6 months of comedy before I got into like the shorter jokes and, mm-hmm. and some things that didn't have anything to do with my life, you would be blown away by the Dennis Leary influence.
Oh really?
Like it was a heavy, heavy Dennis Leary influence. I just thought that's what comedy was. Like I would be at open mics in LA where it's hot as hell,
mm-hmm.
and I'm standing there with my leather jacket over my arm, and then it's time to go on, and I'm like, got to get the leather jacket and point at everybody. Like
wow.
I'm shocked if I ever see an old video.
Dude, I have one that was just sent to me. Oh my God, it's so hard to watch. I mean, so hard to watch. And this is before my Attell phase was you're going to laugh, was my Rock phase, my Chris Rock phase. Swear to God. I would pace, crouch. I would hit punchlines like this with this hand. I mean, I didn't realize, I see it now.
Doing this thing.
I didn't realize it at the time that like, he was definitely, he was the guy right before I started mm-hmm. who I was like, this is the best guy. And then so when I started doing it, I'm like, I'm just like mimicking who I think the best guy is, you know? And then, yeah, it just, it's so cringy. Like it's hard to watch.
Oh, I toured with Chris Rock a couple years ago. He was like, do you want to open for me? It was like me, Michelle Wolf and Jeff Ross on his European tour.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, fuck yeah. Like arenas in Europe.
Yeah.
I'm definitely in. I was like, I'm going to watch every set he does and I'm going to learn from the master.
Mm-hmm.
And after watching it twice, I was like, there's nothing I can fucking take from this guy.
Yeah.
You know what? It's like, be more like a preacher. Like he's yeah. just so great at what he does.
Yes.
That I was more like, what do you do in the green room before? Like, yeah. oh, you've got like a vaporizer thing that just like, you have someone read through your notes from the night before. So you just like kind of half listening, you just kind of soak it up. Like that meant a lot to me.
Yeah.
But watching him on stage, I was like, you're too great yeah. to learn anything from.
Yeah. I was so, I mean, I try to tell people now that, you know, you forget that these time periods, you know, they just go away. But I go, you don't understand when like Bring the Pain came out. This was pre, you know, you're not streaming anything. This is like, so it's an HBO event where people were like, this is the thing. And they would do like four a year. They would do like Carlin, Chris, Robin Williams, and, you know, like one other, like huge, like that was a special. It mm-hmm. wasn't like today. And man, I remember seeing that special and being like, what in the fuck? Like I had never laughed so hard. It was like so smart, so on point. Like everything was just like right on the nose. Like, and I was blown away, you know? And then I just wanted to be that guy.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, that special, I think, was a turning point for a lot of comedians. Yeah. I just never seen someone take batting practice and knock every single pitch to the fucking moon. Like,
yeah.
it was every single thing killed.
Crush.
We're like, oh, this is... Did you watch the special about Bring the Pain?
No, I don't think I did.
There was like either AMC or A&E. It's a, in the past couple years. It's
really?
Definitely
it's
worth
a doc
checking
about
out.
It?
It's a doc, like an hour doc about
that.
It.
Yeah.
Where he like he's watching clips of it and it's like how he prepared for it. And the fact that he went to Washington, D.C. to do it as opposed to somewhere else meant a lot. Where like every bit of it's amazing. And there's one point where they show him the famous, I love black people, I hate the N-word.
Yeah, bit. Yeah.
And it's showing like Ava DuVernay being like, why did he have to do this? Like, I love the special, but why? And all these other people being like, oh, I wish he hadn't. It gave white people permission to say mm-hmm, the word. Mm-hmm. And then Chris is like, I stand by it. It's funny as hell. Like,
yeah.
It's the best. It's so great to watch.
I remember, I didn't see that, but I remember him talking about, because that bit became like such a, it's like a signature bit of the time, not even of the special, you know? Like, and he was saying how, he goes, I did that bit, I think close to the taping, I think, in Oakland.
Yes.
And he's like, it went really poorly because it was all N-words.
Yeah. They were like, we like yeah. to tear up the yeah, club. Yeah, we like yeah. getting thrown out of the club. Like, why are you yeah. making fun of us?
Yeah.
We bought tickets.
And then he goes, but I did it in, you know, D.C. And it just, yeah. I mean, that whole bit, the whole special, it was just genius, you know? So I think once I was like, yeah, I'm doing stand-up now, I was like, well, obviously, I mean, I don't even think I consciously was like, I will imitate him. But it just kind of...
No. You well, know. Your first year, you get a lot of great. You just imitate what you've seen work yeah. from other people. Whatever you get laughs for, you keep doing. By the end of that year, you better have your voice.
Yeah,
or you're in some trouble.
Yeah,
you know,
dude, I was talking like him too.
Talking like a towel?
No, like him. Like
oh,
Rock.
Like Chris Rock?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I did the thing that really that I caught myself doing. Attell would do this thing where he would try out a new joke. And by watching him every night, you knew what was new and what wasn't. He would try a new joke that wouldn't get a good response. And he'd be like, yeah, all right. And then he'd tell an old joke that would always kill. And the audience would go nuts. And he'd go, and I just, that's so funny to do.
Yeah.
That you're like mad at the audience for laughing at like an older joke. That I did that once. And I was like, I've got to cut it out. Like,
oh, I
can
see.
Never
yeah,
watch
yeah.
this again. It's
I remember.
A fun mannerism.
I did a six show weekend with him in Brea. And it was one of those things where like Thursday night, he had this one joke where the punchline like killed, right? Friday, I like the joke. Oh, I love that joke. So I'm sitting there just watching him on Friday, early show. He gets the same joke, changes the punchline to something that doesn't work as well. Late show, a third punchline. Saturday, a different, I was like, he just was trying things every show.
Yeah, he's always cycling through.
I watched it. I was like, why would you stop doing the one? He's like, I don't know, I'm just trying to get a better one. I was like,
yeah, I couldn't imagine it. But I mean, Dave Attell is like the most pure comic
yeah.
ever. I can't think of anybody They're like, not that he's the greatest, but when you think of like a stand-up comic and like what you have to do to keep it going, it'll be a sad day when that guy retires.
Yeah, and like also just to be, the way that he stays, I don't know what you want to say, motivated or just like driven to keep, you know what I mean, to keep working. Because I would think at a certain point you're like, I'm not going to work, you know, but he like works at it.
He likes the work. I mean, he doesn't want to do a special. He doesn't want to do an album. He wants to keep working with the same stuff and keep and like and molding it and perfecting it. And he, like, I think, you know, doing the actual show, being in that moment is what his goal is.
Yeah.
And so he gets to do that a couple times a night. Whereas me, I'm like, can't wait to like every time I leave a city, I'm like, I'm never coming back here again. No matter even whether it's great or not. It's like I'm just building to the special. And then it's like I never have to do it again. Then you start from scratch at the
end. Because I think we're on this like we have the same like, you know, we landed in this time where that's how you work. Right. Like
you, in a way that you have the option to.
Yes.
You almost need to turn it over. I always like just think I want to write as many jokes as I can in my lifetime. You know, that like the sooner I put out a special, the sooner I have to do it. Mm-hmm. What I love about you, and like I think Nate does this too, is like you'll be like the special's coming out on August 13th. Tour dates start August 14th for like the new thing. Then I'm like, oh, that is just fucking printing money. What? Because it's like I do a special and everyone's like, oh, we love this special. You're not going to see me on the road for years because I've got to build everything up. But to have people be like, we love this, we get to go see him right now is amazing.
Well, I mean, I remember we talked about it one time. You were like, yeah, your like your story about going to the zoo would be the equivalent of me writing like 60 jokes, you know? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, yeah, because I like just I have jokes in this story, but it fills up 10 minutes. You know?
I mean, I'm jealous. I'm legitimately jealous of how low your bar is.
Yeah, it's pretty low.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just, I mean, it's just like, I talked to my dad today.
I've tried to work in like a story and the audience is like, waiting for the twist. And I'm like, this is just a story. But even if it's funny, we need that. We need the twist.
Well, I'll write a joke and I'll just be like, I wrote a joke. And then I'll do it and I'll be like, that's what you get for this hour. And then I go back to what else I'm doing. I mean, I don't know. Like you guys, I was always blown away by it. Like by like pure joke writing, you know? And like, I remember I was trying to do stories before I had the skill, because you realize it takes a skill set to do them well.
Not just a skill set, but experience. A 22-year-old telling stories is a lot fucking different than a 42-year-old telling stories.
And I didn't, I mean, at the time, you don't know it. And I'm like, I remember just trying to, thinking that this story was funny and like trying to, and having it just absolutely eat shit. But then like 10 years later, remembering the story, telling it, and being able to make it work.
Yeah.
You know? But I mean,
the only thing worse than that would be like political comedians when you're in your 20s and you're like, why are you trying to tell anyone how to vote?
It's so
insane. So funny.
Yeah, I mean, most comedians I know, they're like, I don't even respect someone who's a comedian in their 20s. Like, it's like shit like that.
No.
They're like, I don't want to hear anything you have to say.
No.
Nothing.
That's why I went to jokes, because I was like, I'm sick of eating shit with my stories that no one cares about. Like, but if I can do jokes, like maybe I'm from another planet.
And didn't you write, like when you were writing for television, like the late night guys, you're just like writing like dozens of jokes a day, right?
I was writing like 75, 80. And it was different because I started on the show. It was me and one other guy.
What? 75, 80 jokes?
And we didn't know what he didn't have a voice yet. So we didn't know what he was going to like day to day. He wasn't like, oh, he loves this topic.
This is Fallon?
This is Fallon. It wasn't like he was like, oh, Fallon's going to want another Octomom joke. He would be like psyched about one day and not want to hear it the next. Things got old quickly. So we're just like firing them out. Instead of writing your best 10 and giving those in, you just have to give him 80 and be like, maybe he'll like something from this, but they wanted numbers.
Jesus. So it was how many of your like 80 do you feel like these are like solid, like really solid?
I'd have maybe 5 that I would be like, if this got in the show, I'd be happy.
Yeah. I remember one time I wrote on a pilot for Jonah Ray.
Mm-hmm. Video game one?
Yeah, the video game
the
one.
Where he hurt himself?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Kumail and I were writers on it, along with a couple other like writer-producer guys. And I had this joke. I forget the details of the joke, but it's like, it's in the script. It's going to be. And I'm like pulled Jonah aside. I don't know why. And I'm like, hey, you know, the whole thing is, man, like, don't like, if you don't like any of these, like, don't say a joke you don't want to say. He's like, I don't want to say that one. And it was mine. I was like, you give it a shot, man. Just like, you know what I mean? Like, just see if you like it. And he was like, I just said I don't want to do it. I'm like, yeah, but I think we should leave it in. And I didn't tell him it was mine.
That's better. I had a guy once come into me on a show. It was like The Burn or something, like a Jeff Ross roasting show. And they're like, why don't you want to do, the writer comes, he's like, hey, why didn't you want to do this this one joke? Like, cause I'm like, I usually come in with my stuff.
Yeah.
And whenever I do like a talking head thing, they're like, so we're going to ask you questions. I'm like, no, let me cut you off. I've written down jokes for all your questions. Just let me just say them. And if you want to like ask it again, you can. But like I do my thing, you know. And the guy's like, why didn't you want to do this one? I was like, oh, I just didn't like the joke. I didn't. And then I halfway through, I'm like, why? And he goes, I wrote it. I'm like, don't do that to me. Don't come in and ask like why I didn't like the joke when I clearly said no.
Yeah.
You don't need the reasoning.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I did another one where a different Comedy Central pilot where I wrote on, where the head writer, I mean, I'm like total newbie. I don't know what I'm, you know, like how writing staff job, none of it works. He's like, he gives me these note cards and he's like, you know, here's like five jokes of like for each topic. And there's like five topics. So he's like, just pull out like, he's like, pull good ones for each of these topics. So like I pulled for the five topics and it's all the different writer's jokes, like four of the, I pulled mine out. And then he was like, are these all yours? And I was like, he was like, no, man, we gotta mix it up. I was like, I don't fucking know.
It reminds me, when I was a kid, I'm the oldest of five kids. Mm-hmm. It was like five kids in 7 years. And we went to Montessori school. We all go to Montessori school. And this is like the year after I've left. Like I've got three sisters in the school at one point. And they're doing like an end of the year presentation. And my dad was like an amateur photographer. And they were like, Tony Justin, like, would you do like the slideshow of all the kids? And they gave them all these pictures to do a slideshow. And then they're sitting there and they're watching it. And it's like a picture of my sisters playing. And they're like, oh, it's like another picture of like one of my other sisters. And then it's like, oh, like the first 20 slides are just his family.
Kids.
Just his family. He was like, well, those are the best pictures. And everyone was mad.
Yeah, of course. Like,
everyone was mad.
It's the best pictures of your family, dude. Yeah.
Like, what? How did you not think this would look bad?
I don't know this about you. So that's what I wanted to ask. This is like the time where there's just like so much heat behind conspiracy theories. Like it used to be like fringe. Mm-hmm. Like when we were kids, you'd hear about somebody saying something like, you know, the moon landing and you're like, what? And then now it's like, because of social media, because internet voices are louder, you're able to like round up more people about it. What are you, a conspiracy theory guy or no?
I think it's the dumbest shit in the world.
Okay.
I think it's the dumb, when people are like, do your own research. Like there are people that do the research, like who've dedicated their lives to doing the research. I believe them. Like I believe science. I believe the New York Times.
Yeah.
And I think these people are all nuts. The fact that like the flat earth is becoming a thing again is completely insane to me. And they all sound like that.
Have you ever seen, there's clips on YouTube of flat earthers conducting like a real scientific experiment. And then the experiment reveals that it's not flat. And they're like, the fuck, man. And they're
messed
like,
it up.
Yeah. They're blown. There's multiple clips like that. They have like millions of views and you see them. They're like, I don't know, man, it looks like it's not flat. They're like super upset.
Yeah.
They're like committed themselves to this.
I don't know what they get out of it. Even like the moon landing. I don't know what you get out of believing that it didn't happen.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, people talk about like the frame rates and it looks like there's wires there.
Yeah.
I mean, the funny thing about like something like that, you go, do you realize the level, like the level of communication and agreement that it would take amongst this many people to keep that secret going?
You would have to kill every single person who was in the room to keep that a secret.
How many people were there?
The government fucks up so much stuff. The idea they could pull that off is
you can't get four people to agree on an appetizer. You think that fucking 300 people in a space where like, oh, we're all gonna be quiet about
it. No one's gonna want credit for filming the moon landing, for faking that at some point.
It's wild. Yeah. Okay. So that's because I'm basically like, I hear most of them and I just nod. I'm like, that's nice. Like when somebody shares their, but I don't really engage it. I just kind of go like, I can't believe you think this.
It's so dumb to me that I can't, if I even tried to respond, but I just don't hang out with people who are like that. And it boggles the mind that you would not listen to scientists. I remember like a political cartoon being like, someone's, it's like if they're on an airplane and they're like, I'm sick of these pilots who think they can do everything. Who says I should fly the plane? It's like, that's what you sound like to me.
Yeah.
Like these people train their whole lives to do this. I hated science as a kid. I hated math. So people who like didn't and were good at it, I believe them when they tell me things. Do your own research is so stupid. It's all that QAnon shit.
Yeah. Did you look into it, man?
Yeah.
And like,
if you look at these videos, like watch this video I sent you and you'll realize that Fauci's full of shit. You're like, the guy has been doing science for like 70 years. I believe him.
Yeah. Or when people go like, you know, somebody like Fauci got something wrong. I'm like, yeah, I mean, that happens too. He's a, you know, human beings.
And he admits like, yeah, that was, at the time I thought I was right. And now the data changes. So like science can evolve. Like, okay.
We didn't know we were dealing with.
Yeah, that's fine.
That seems reasonable to me.
Totally.
You know?
Yeah. I despise them all.
Yeah. I mean, there's like such a loud, it's such a loud voice now. It used to be like, you know, clearly somebody just walking in circles at a bus stop. You're like, that's a conspiracy theorist, you know?
And it's like, you got to respect my opinion. It's like, that's not your opinion. You're totally wrong.
Yeah.
You're totally wrong.
Yeah, I don't have to respect that.
Yeah, like you respect my religion. Like I'll respect your religious beliefs, but sure. I'm not going to be like, oh yes, of course, like this on the third day. Like I can't do that.
Yeah, you hear that, Nadav? That was for you.
Can people, like people listening to the podcast, can hear them laughing?
Yeah, yeah.
Do they get paid by how loud they are?
No.
No, they just
some people love it, some don't.
I can believe that.
So one thing I learned about you just before we rolled today, I cannot believe that you were in a fraternity.
I was in a fraternity, yeah.
I just, it doesn't add up to me. Like Bert Kreischer, I'm like, yeah, but I get it.
We went to very different schools. Like Florida State fraternity was way different than a Tulane University fraternity. Like there were only like 8 at the time. I think there's like 5 now. I
mean, at Tulane?
Yeah. They kept getting kicked off because you're in New Orleans. You don't need a fraternity.
Yeah, that's true.
Like you just went to bars all the time. Even in a fraternity, we went to bars all the time. But like my freshman year, my first semester freshman year, I had friends who we live on like a co-ed floor. Mm-hmm. We all became good friends. And two of my friends were like very gregarious and would go out and meet people. And they got like early bids into a fraternity, this fraternity called ATL. And they're like, yeah, these guys are like the crazy ones. They're like not like, they don't do like the normal like formals and stuff. They're just like the idiots, like Animal House. And that rang a bell in my head. I was like, I loved Animal House. So one night, me and one of my other friends drank like an entire bottle of whiskey, like pre-gaming, and then could not go out. We like couldn't walk. So our friends just took us down the street and just opened up the fraternity house. They had the code because they'd already been let in and just threw us on the couches. And we pass out for hours. We wake up, don't know where we are, destroy the house. Flip couches, tearing things off the wall, throwing things everywhere. And then we went back to sleep. So the fraternity guys come home at like 3 a.m. and are like, what the fuck is this? And I'm like, what the fuck is this? And they loved it.
And so
for the night, they're like, you guys are awesome. Like you guys are crazy. And we spent the night breaking into other fraternity houses, like tearing shit up. And then they just loved us for the rest of the year. And then like in the next semester when it was supposed to be like, that's when you actually rush and do everything.
Yeah.
My grades were so bad. My parents were like, you were not going into fraternity. So I had to like sneak under the radar and do it. And I hated pledging so much.
Yeah.
Being a pledge and like all these guys being mean to me. And at the end they're like, we're brothers now. And I'm like, I hate you all.
Yeah.
And so for like the next 3 years, I never paid dues. I never came around. Like I lived next door to the frat house my senior year and never was there.
So you didn't really participate?
Friends. No. But my best friend to this day, who I have like a podcast with, was in that. Like, I wouldn't have met him if not for that fraternity. But
okay.
We both knew that this was not for us and just kind of went along with it. But at Tulane, being in a fraternity meant nothing because you just, again, you went out to bars and drank wherever.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember I had my like reservations about it. You know, I went to a really small school and I was like, man, I don't think I should. And then a couple of fraternities offered me, you know, or whatever it is to
the bid. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was like in the mailbox at the, you know, student center. And I didn't do it. But I remember this is felt frat like that on the freshman hall, there was a real fucking lunatic in one of the dorms. And he had a very passive roommate. And this dude was a fucking real crazy person. So you would hear death metal, like loud as fuck, coming out of this room. And you go down there and you're like, hey, what's up? And it's like, it could be like 11 o'clock at night and it's full blast. And you're like, what's going on? And his roommate is sleeping. And I'm like, how is he asleep? I mean, full blast. And he was like, it's my fucking room, you know? And I was like, he goes, you want to see some shit? And I'm like, yeah, okay. He goes, check this out. And he put on Brass Knuckles. I swear to God. And he goes, watch this. And full over the top punches that dude in the ass cheek. And you you just see a guy who's completely just go, like he would wake up. And I would sit there and laugh so hard, but I'd be like, you're a fucking monster, man. Oh, he would do shit like that. Felt like a fraternity. Oh. He would do horribly abusive shit to him.
My freshman year, I'm like, I'm so excited to go to Tulane. I'm so excited. I had never seen New Orleans before I went down for my first day of school.
Yeah.
But I'm so pumped. And I get there and my roommate is a Navy ROTC kid. He's got the shaved head. His room is immaculate. He's shining his shoes all the time. He wakes up at 5 a.m. every day, goes to bed at like 11. And I was a nightmare. I was like a total nightmare to be a roommate with because I was going out drinking all night, coming home at 6 a.m, like just like snoring all day. My room was, some side of the room was trashed, never did laundry. And I found out later on that when you fill out your roommate forms, mm-hmm. and you're like, what kind of person are you? Like on a scale of 1 to 10, are you messy or clean? I put like, I was honest about who I was. I'm a future comedian. This is how I act.
You really did?
Yeah. And my dad, before he mailed it in, looked at it and was like, not my son. And made everything like a 1, which is how I got signed up with the ROTC kid.
Uh-oh.
And after I found out years later and I was like, Dad, you ruined his life.
Yeah.
Like I still just did whatever I was going to do.
Right.
But that kid, I mean, he could have made friends and like had a real social life at school.
Yeah.
Like you were awful to both of us.
That's yeah. That, I mean, having somebody set you up with the wrong roommate is a big fucking deal.
Yeah.
I had like a real weird, like rich kid freshman year who would spend, he saw him, like how I lived and he was like, I don't want to really spend a lot of time in here.
Yeah.
he would leave for long weekends, which was great. And then we had bunk beds in the freshman dorms and I would let people sleep in his bed, which is so disrespectful. And then he would get back and he would be like, did someone sleep in my bed? And I'd be like, no. He's like, there's long black hairs in my bed. And I was like, I don't know, man.
The housekeeper, probably. Yeah. I used to put on my roommate's Navy uniform and walk around when he was out of town for the weekend.
Really?
And someone's like, you will get arrested. You will get thrown into jail for wearing a Navy uniform that's not yours. Do not do that. And I was like, okay. All right. Thanks for letting me know.
And you'd wear that around town?
I would just wear it around campus, like thinking it was funny.
Holy
Thank
shit.
Thank God. Like if any of the Navy kids saw me, they would just beat the shit out of me on the spot. But
really?
I would just like wear it around the quad thinking it was like, hey, check it out.
Is it like the whites or?
It was like a navy blue, you know, over, but it was clearly a Navy uniform.
How did you get it?
It was in my roommate's. My roommate was Navy ROTC.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, and then you guys is this the one you're friends with now or no?
No. After freshman year, he was like, do you want to live together again? I was like, you're out of your mind. I'm going off and getting a house. And like, I've lived with that guy. That guy's my best friend now.
Okay.
We lived together in like 5 different places.
Oh, wow. Is he the one you podcast with?
Mm-hmm.
What's the podcast again?
It's called JRVP, the Jeselnik and Rosenthal Vanity Project. It's Greg Rosenthal is my best friend. I'm godfather to it. Like, imagine the person who would make me godfather to their kids.
Mm.
Like how trusting you'd have to be.
Very.
And he's an analyst for the NFL Network. So he has like his own podcast. He does his own thing. And we were like,
he's an actual analyst for them?
Yeah. He's like on TV and stuff and writes for them. And at the time, I was like, let's do something together. So we would go, we would like sneak into the NFL. He'd sneak me into the NFL and we would do an NFL podcast, like talking about off the field issues. And like every week his boss would be like, you could get fired for this. Like Anthony's going to be fine, but you could get fired. But we were having too much fun.
Yeah.
So at the end of like 16 weeks, they were like, okay, that's the end of season 1. And then like, get the fuck out of here. And we ended up bringing it back.
And you would do it at NFL Network or something? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of fascinated by this. How did he develop the knowledge to be an analyst? You know what I mean? Like, did he play football?
He doesn't look anything like a football player. I don't think he ever played at any level.
But he obviously, so he likes the game. But then don't you have to, like, if you're not working in coaching or as a player,
he was a smart guy, loved sports writing. I mean, when we lived together, we moved to LA together, and he was working at a production company and hated it and really was like, I want to be a sports writer. And started working at Fox, would like go in on Sundays and watch all the games and like help other people who were analysts, like give them stats and stuff. And then just kept writing, ended up working for Roto-World. Remember Roto-World?
Yeah.
It was like the first fantasy sports thing before fantasy sports exploded. Roto-World got bought by NBC. And at this point, he's gravitating towards football more than anything else. I think because fantasy was so big.
Fantasy's huge. But Do you play fantasy?
No. I'm a Pittsburgh guy, so I can't even imagine rooting for another player on another team.
I just never got it. I love football.
Yeah.
You know, I played from fourth grade through high school. And like, I just thought that football was the only thing I need. Like, you know what I mean? Entertainment wise, playing wise, I just football. And people would get so excited when fantasy stuff started. And I was just like, all right, yeah, it just doesn't do anything for it. I don't know what to tell you. No. I love watching the games.
Yeah. But I don't gamble. I don't play fantasy, but I love watching. Like the idea of like my team winning, the Steelers winning, but I lost the bet because they didn't cover, is I can't have that. Yeah. Like that's infuriating to me. But yeah, he just eventually worked his way up from NBC Sports to, he was like the guy telling Chris Collinsworth what to say.
Jesus.
You know, at one point. And then he went to the NFL and he's been there ever since.
So he has a deep knowledge. Because like some of those guys, I'm like, how the fuck do you even know this? Without like, if you're not like a John Gruden type where you can like, you know, you ever seen him break down a film? You're like, oh my God. Like it's so intricate. And like, if you're not that type or have access to like a job like that, being like a GA or, you know, something like you're an assistant to somebody. I don't even know how they, because it's amazing when you see it done in real time. You're watching a game and immediately the breakdown happens.
But like those guys get it wrong. They're like, this guy got beat. It's like, that's not his job.
Yeah, yeah.
His job was to cover short. This guy got beat back. Like this guy was out of position.
Yeah.
Like I think they said someone said in football, on every single play, someone messes up.
Right.
You know, somebody fucks up their assignment or does something they shouldn't do.
Which is why do your job is such a big thing, you know?
Exactly. But I can't tell you who's doing what. I have no idea.
Yeah. I mean, I the thing that I love about a great like analyst in a game, when you're watching like Collinsworth, like when you see the play, you just see like the sack and you're like, oh, he got him. But like when he immediately tells you how protection broke down.
Oh, when Tony Romo tells you what's going to happen.
Oh, yeah, it's amazing.
And it does, it's the best.
It's amazing. Yeah. He's like, this is going to be a screen right here to the right. And you're like, what? And then it happens. He's like, yeah, I know, because he watched film all week and he has, you know, thousands of hours of playing in his head. But yeah, I love that, man.
Yeah, me too.
Because I feel like it's something where I already love the game and you're highlighting something to me that makes me go like, oh, even there's more there, you know, I can learn more. I thought you think you know the game and then you're like, I don't know shit.
Yeah.
Talk to a pro and they explain
it's a different
to you
language.
Like, oh.
It's a different language. Yeah.
Yeah. I've talked to some pro guys about like little things and I go like, yeah, dude, in 30 years, that never occurred to me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Never occurred to me. I love it though. I could watch, I could sit on a film session, I feel like, and just eat it up.
I don't know. I don't know if I'd get too bored.
Really?
Like, I love watching the games, but it's like part of it's the way they're shot. I mean, the camera's going, but it's like, if you just set a camera up like wide angle and it's like let's
practice
watch this
session
over and over again. Yeah. Yeah, I would lose it.
Yeah. I just feel like if it made me feel like I now have a higher understanding of what's going on, I feel like I could get into it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that dude, like now he's coaching again, but they said that like when Gruden retired from coaching initially, he set up a room, like an office. He got an office in Tampa that's just full of game tape, like full of tape. And he would just go there every day and break down film for himself.
It's insane. Like, coaches love to break down tape. Like,
yeah.
I mean, there was like a guy, it was like a coach of some like SEC school, and there was like a hurricane coming. And then like, you've got to batten down the hatches and wait. And he was like, told his wife, I'm going to go into the film office and throughout the hurricane, I'm going to watch film. And the wife was like, you're staying here with your fucking family, asshole. You're not going anywhere. And it's like, all these coaches just want to break down tape 24/7. The idea of being a coach that gets 4 hours of sleep a week and is breaking down tape the rest of it sounds like a miserable life.
Yeah. And I love college ball. And the thing about you, you have like a, you know, a fantasy, right, in your head of like, oh, I love, I wish I could work in this field, you know, like it's a momentary kind of passing fantasy.
But every, every young man wants to work in sports in some capacity at some time.
But the reality of a high level college coach's life, you're like, fuck that.
Yeah.
Where they are, they're at the, you know, they're there at like 5:30 or 6, and then it's film and it's coaching and conditioning, and then they get in their car and then they got to go recruit players, and it never ends.
Oh yeah. You know, massaging boosters, you know, not even the guys who are paying you under the table, the people who are like, we'll get you fired if we don't like what you do at this dinner.
Yeah.
You know, that seems, it seems like a nightmare.
Yeah. And then you have to have that, that weekly, you know, like kind of junket with those people, and then you have to do your radio show, and you have to sit there with some dipshit who's asking you about the play calling last week when you guys lost.
Yeah.
Every week.
I mean, the only coach, the only like college coach that I've ever envied, that I've been like, that guy had a great life, Sandusky. You know, Jerry Sandusky, I think, just knew, like, he didn't have to take it too seriously.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, you know, it's not all business. You can have some pleasure in there. But other than that,
Man. Well, we were all waiting for that, weren't we? So what? Fuck. Steelers this year? You think good things, bad things?
I have no idea, man. I really haven't. I'm glad Ben's back, but it could be a disaster. I mean, every team now
is, he like our age?
Injury away. He's 38, I think.
It's wild when you go, when you think about the fact that like with Brady, you're like, so my entire like working life, when I had like bullshit jobs and restaurants and then post-production and then I was an open micer, and that whole time until today, he's been in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
It's insane.
Well, there's a point when you're a kid, there's always that thing in the back of your head that like, he's older. You know, this guy who just jumped over three things, like, he's older than me, but maybe one day.
Yeah,
you know, I could still be in the NBA if I wanted to.
Yeah, yeah.
But now, yeah, it's crazy to see these players. Like, who was it just retired? The kicker.
Vinatieri.
Yeah, Vinatieri was 48. Fuck.
Yeah.
I mean, that's insane to me. But, I mean, the Steelers, it's like it one injury away. I thought they were going to be amazing last year, and then the defense fell apart. Ben fell apart. I think Ben's going to have a better elbow this year than he did last year.
Are you
year.
A guy that, do you go to Pittsburgh and go to games and everything? You do that?
I get to Pittsburgh a couple times a year, and I would only get there for like the Christmas game, which is like a game, it's like week 17, nothing's on the line. It's a night game against Carolina, and it's just freezing ass cold. Football, I would much rather watch indoors.
Me too.
But I see a hockey game anytime I'm in Pittsburgh. Go see a baseball game anytime I'm in Pittsburgh, because those are better live.
Yeah.
Especially at those that arena, that stadium. But football, I hate watching it that live. I hate it.
I'm kind of the same way. Like, I've been to a number of games live, and I just go, as much as this is definitely my favorite sport, I'd rather be on a couch and, you know, just honestly just enjoying it more, seeing the game more.
You can see everything. You have no idea what's happening.
NBA is fun live. I don't know if you've gone to NBA games.
I have like a little bit, but I'm not that big a basketball guy. So
yeah,
it's not as fun. I've taken like my god kids to a game, and that was fun to kind of see them. People treat you much differently at a game when you show up with little kids than when you're there like two dudes like drinking beers.
Yeah.
That I enjoyed that experience. But hockey, I love live. Hockey live is the best of all the live sports.
I've been to a few. I've been to a couple Kings games. Mm-hmm. And then like years ago when I was a kid, I went to, they were called the Minnesota North Stars before they moved. But the games are, it's an intense, fun atmosphere.
It's just so fast. You can see everything. On TV, you're just like hoping your guy comes from the other side of the screen to the puck. Like,
right.
You really are just hoping. You have no idea.
Yeah.
But watching it live is really fun.
And those dudes are savages, man. Hockey players are fucking out of their minds.
Yeah.
Doing that shit on fucking skates, slamming into people with that speed. What are you doing? Like 60 miles an hour and you're hitting that guy?
Oh, and they all like smoke cigarettes and get wasted after every game. Like they don't care at
Missing
all.
Missing teeth and their faces are cut open. And they're like, fuck
yeah. They love
it. That's a little different than, you know, people who flop.
I mean, listen to like a hockey interview versus like an interview in any other sport. Hockey guys are all, it could be the same guy given every interview. They have no ego whatsoever. They don't say anything that would be inflammatory.
Yeah.
They're completely the opposite. They're very humble. The opposite of every other sport.
Yeah, that's true.
I think they really self-police the game.
Yeah, I think you're right. I've never really thought about that, but it must be part of like the coaching, like the upbringing, getting into that sport of like being humble, like truly and a team player and you ain't shit. And
yeah,
and also it's a
guy.
Humbling game.
Yes.
You know, Like, yeah, just the fact that there's sticks and ice and this fucking puck flying around at 100 miles an hour.
Yeah.
Like, that's a humbling environment to be
in.
In
football, it's like the guy's talking about shit, but like, yeah, he's the wide receiver. They get to do that.
Yeah, they
do. We let them do that. The quarterback can't get away with it, but the wide receiver can. In hockey, there's no wide receivers.
No.
Everyone's dealing with it. And if you do get out of line, they'll let you know on the ice.
Yeah, it's funny because the NFL definitely has, like, there's diva positions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, wide receiver, DBs.
Yeah.
Big time.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Like, the fucking, I laugh so hard at Jalen Ramsey, like, post game interviews. They're hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's like, there's nobody like sassing people and then be like, to the reporters, he's like, did he?
Yeah.
Did he? Like, doing all this shit where you're like, it is entertainment. Like, people are like, oh, it pisses me off. I'm like, I fucking find it entertaining, dude.
Anytime it makes someone mad, I'm like, you're racist.
Yeah.
If this makes you mad, if Richard Sherman looking right into the camera and screaming at the top of his lungs,
yeah,
it makes you mad, then you are racist because that was awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
That was awesome.
You just don't like black people that are all sassy and shit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Black people that talk shit upset you, you might want to look inside for a moment.
If you do a touchdown dance and someone screams, act like you've been there before,
oh, yeah,
you are racist.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And also, you've never scored a touchdown.
Never.
Yeah.
Never. If I can't, I used to think, like, my senior year, I almost played high school ball, mm-hmm, just to be on, like, special teams. Like, and I'm Western Pennsylvania, where it was like,
yeah,
it was the shit. And I could not play football at all, but I was like, special teams would be fun. And they were like, you'd get kicked off the team immediately. You would, like, have one hand on a tackle, rip your helmet off, and be running around, like dancing in circles for 10 minutes. Like, yeah I would go crazy
Did
if
you
I ever
do
scored
it?
A touchdown. No.
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 I never scored a touchdown.
Would you play?
I played D tackle. I played linebacker when I was younger. I played defensive tackle in high school. I played on the O-line too. I had, like, sacks, you know, forced fumbles, fumble recoveries. I had an interception before. All things like, I had a sack where I definitely did a ridiculous, you know, sort of whatever celebration afterward. Yeah, but it's like, it's in the moment, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, how are you not excited? I can't imagine if you score a touchdown, especially at that level.
Oh, yeah.
And there's fucking 100,000 people there. What? You're going to be like, here you go, sir.
Yeah.
Like, okay.
Yeah, I'm going to sit here and pray. Get the fuck out of here.
Yeah,
I'm going to do a little dance.
Do a dance. Yeah. I want to dance. I mean, I find it boring to hand it to the ref, you know?
I would be mad if I didn't get a penalty afterwards.
Are you going on tour?
No. I've got it's going to be at least a year before I can get back on the road.
Seriously?
Yeah.
That's
it. I just need to get the material, and I'm getting up almost every night, but it's incremental. It's slowly but surely. Hopefully in a year I'll have 45, 50. I can go to clubs and then build that from 45 to 50 to an hour, and then theaters. But wow. I can't wait to get back out.
I know, dude. You feel it now, right? That things are opening up. Like, it's really happening.
Yeah. Yeah.
Although it does kind of feel like to me it's only happening here, meaning in the United States. Like, every time I look at, like, world news, I'm
I wouldn't be booking those European shows just yet.
No, but like,
and I think it's going to get bad again.
You do?
Yes. I think there'll be some sort of backslide. I don't know if it'll be as bad as it was,
yeah,
but too many people are being too cavalier that I just don't know. And luckily, like, my social circle is very small. Like, you're one of, like, I don't talk to that many people, even when I go out and do shows. I'm kind of like off on my own, that I don't worry about myself so much, but I can just see. I mean, the fact that California is, like, so excited right now for how far we've come, I'm like, it could dip real quick.
Yeah, and then, like, things are, like, open now.
Mm-hmm. I think today's the first day, like, you don't have to wear a mask at the gym, which is a big thing.
Yeah, it was, like, all over the news. Like, they're like, California is open again. But this state's too crazy for shit to just function the way it should. You know, we have 40 million people.
Yeah, but it's, like, it's some of the states in the South that just never believed it ever, that are still have, like, that are still in the middle of an outbreak, that I think those guys, like Michigan, I worry about, you know, just places that never took it seriously and aren't going to. That one variant comes along and just knocks everyone on their ass.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a really fun time we're living in, man.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Really exciting.
Yeah. JRVP.
Yep.
Available. Mm-hmm. Which day does it come out?
It comes out Tuesdays. Tuesday nights.
Tuesdays. It's audio only.
Mm-hmm.
Will you add video at some point?
If I had something like this, I would love to, but I want it to look good. You know, even when we did a live stream, buy tickets. And since my friend and my producer do stuff for the NFL, they had, like, the O-ring set up. They looked great. I look like complete shit. like my lighting is terrible. I don't have a good background.
We can get you some of that stuff though.
And I was like, maybe when you guys abandon this for Austin, then I can take it over.
All right. I'll see you in September.
Seems like a lot of work.
Yeah, a little bit. It's always good to see you, man.
Always a pleasure.
Thank you for coming. Thank you for doing this.
Thanks for having me.
And you guys check out JRVP every Tuesday, and we'll see you next week.
Bert and Tom, Tom and Bert. One goes topless while the other wears a shirt. Tom tells stories and Bert's the machine. There's not a chance in hell that they'll keep it clean. Here's what we call Two Bears, One Cave. No scripts, a bit of booze, amateur partology. Dirty jokes, raunchy humor, no apologies. Here's what we call Two Bears, One Cave.